Broadcasting and streaming worldwide from the Golf Club Studios, it's the Golf Club Radio Show with Danielle Tucker.
Hi, Danielle. It's Ben Crenshaw.
Ben Crenshaw, we have so many fabulous tee times to fill this morning. We got to get up. We got to get out because it's not all that hot. It's a beautiful day for a round of golf. The weather is holding up for us because, you know what? If you don't get out soon, it's going to rain. And, you know, it's not, I know we're ducks. Golfers are ducks. And we all want to get out in the rain and play golf. Maybe not. So here are tee times, all right? Ready for this? Volcano. Oh, it's just 57 degrees up Volcano, partly cloudy. It's a beautiful day, though. There's an 8:30, a 9:24, and a 10:48. Makalei has an 8:52 and a 9:40 and a 10:20, all on the Big Island. We've got Kauai at Poipu, 8:40, 10:40. And at Puakea, 8:50 and 9:18 and an 11 o'clock. And then at Kauai Lagoons, we have a 10 o'clock. And then Hawaii Kai has an 8:52, an 8:30 at Turtle Bay, a 9:10 and an 11:08 as well. So, see, there's all kinds of options. You can get out early, go midday, stop and eat something. It's just going to be fabulous. Royal Hawaiian Country Club has an 8:56, a 9:30, a 10:28. I know, I'm getting to it. Eba Beach Golf Course is a 9:06 and a 10:08. Bayview has a 9:30, a 10:10, and an 11:36. That's in Kaneohe. Really cool course right on the bay. That's why it's called Bayview. And now, Wailea Gold. There's a 9:20, an 11:30, an 11:40. The Emerald Course has a 12:30, a 1:20, and a 1:30. And on the Blue Course, there's an 8:40 and a 9:30 and an 11:40. Now, the Blue Course is probably the least damaging. It's a little bit easier than the Gold and the Emerald. All right, Maui Nui, there's an 8:52, 10:10, 11:08. This is what I'm getting to, okay? At Maui Nui, the posse is going out. Wailea, there's a movie crew on break, and they're going to be going out. We've got, oh yes, Women Mean Business heading out at Royal Hawaiian Country Club, and the Lost Boys are playing at Poipu. Turtles, they're heading out at Puakea. And Jack and Jill, they're playing at Volcano, and may you all hit the sweet spot every time. Okay, I've got a great show for you. Oh, the weather? The forecast, yes. Okay, partly cloudy, windward and Mauka, scattered showers as well. On the leeward side, isolated light showers, high between 78 and 83, and the trade winds about 15 miles per hour. Okay, that great show, I'm promising you. Matt Adams is going to kick off the show. He's been at PGA Show for, weeks. So we're going to talk with Matt Adams about everything golf. Anthony Piopi, golf author and writer and historian. He's president of the Seth Rayner Society. We're going to talk to him about the Seth Rayner Society. Michael Patrick Shields. He's in Palm Springs, must be getting in trouble. He's my travel guru extraordinaire, and he's also the author of Less Than Torrid Tales, host of Michigan's Big Show, and always fun to have on the golf club. Ben Hongo, director of instruction. Yes, we've actually got some very interesting things, like have you ever heard the phrase, you're coming out of your swing? Huh? What do you mean I'm coming out of my swing? Well, it makes a big difference. You got to stay in your swing. How do you do that? And what does it mean? We'll be with Ben and Michael Patrick Shields and Anthony and Matt right after this. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Danielle Tucker's The Golf Club, brought to you by Stretch Lab Hawaii. One-on-one assisted stretching sessions just like the pros get to improve your flexibility and swing. At Kahala Mall, Kailua, Ward Village, and Waikele. It's Aloha Power Equipment's year-end sale. All riding mowers are on sale and mower accessories galore. Mow it, blow it, bag it, done. Let your equipment do the work faster and smarter. Get yours today at Aloha Power Equipment, Evilé, next to the Costco gas station and in Waipahu. The Sentry kicks off the PGA Tour's 2025 season at Kapalua's Plantation Course, Maui, January 2nd through the 5th. The Aloha Section PGA. Teach your children to play golf. It's the gift that lasts forever. For self, health, and friendship, go golf. And the Sony Open in Hawaii 2025 at Waialae, January 8th through the 12th. Tickets available at sonyopeninhawaii.com.
Thank you, Sony, and thank you, Sentry. And, you know, when it comes to your kids, teaching them how to play golf, it teaches them manners as well as a really fun game for kids to play. Matt Adams, host Fairways of Life on Golf Channel, syndicated via TV affiliates around the country, available around the world for free on the Fairways of Life YouTube channel and on every audio platform globally, making Fairways of Life the largest golf and news TV show in the world. Matt Adams is equipment reporter at NBC and Golf Channel, and he's always working play-by-play, the host and reporter on Golf Channel. You know, I don't know how he does it. He's up and he's out and he's on the road. Matt is live weekdays at 8 a.m. Eastern around the world via the Fairways of Life app, fairwaysoflife.com, on demand at every major audio platform. That's iHeart, that's TuneIn, that's iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever you get your podcasts. And now, let's bring him in. Yes, Matt Adams, welcome into the clubhouse.
Danielle, how are you? It's nice to be with you again.
It's good to be with you. It's been years. I can't believe how time flies when you're having, well, fun. Tell us. I mean, did you have fun at the PGA show?
Yeah, it was a great, great show. It was double digits bigger than what it used to be in terms of attendance. It was bigger in terms of square footage this year. It was we exceeded 1 million square feet of space dedicated to everything and all things in the game of golf. It was actually about 1.15 million square feet, if you can believe that.
Wow.
And it had everything. It had the equipment that everybody wants to see. It had travel, if you were talking about your who was it that was your travel guru?
Yes, Michael Patrick Shields, yes.
All right, well, Michael Patrick Shields, I'm sure he was probably there, to tell you the truth. I'm not sure if he was. You could ask him on your own, right? But there was all those companies as well. It's just amazing. It's so good for the game of golf. I've always liked to say the PGA show, on the business side, it's our game's fifth major because, you know, as an industry, we're $102 billion direct economic impact on the U.S. economy. $102 billion. The indirect, which is like hotel rooms and restaurants and all that, is $226 billion a year. And it all starts, the root soil of it all is right there at that PGA show. So it's really important. That's why you can tell I'm excited about it, because it's a big deal.
Yeah, it is a big deal, because not only do you have every equipment company on the planet at the show, all of the new innovations that are coming up through golf to make it maybe a little bit easier for those folks who don't play it so well, or to make it more exacting for those who are absolutely dialed in the game. And then you have the breakout sessions for the PGAs who are there, and they learn more about how they can become better at what they do. So it serves two different purposes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. It's a place for all of us in the golf industry to get together and share best practices. It also is a place where people further their certification as they're required to do as PGA professionals. So there's ongoing classes and training. At the same time, as you have the world's largest golf exhibition. So it is a combination of things, and you see things there that obviously will make it into the marketplace, but to see them in person, to see them advance. I mean, I saw the new Scotty Cameron putters on the day that they announced them, I believe, if memory serves me, it was Thursday morning, and they're the prettiest putters I've ever seen. I don't have anything to do with Scotty Cameron. I'll tell you, they're prettiest putters I've ever seen. They look like jewelry. I mean, they were gorgeous. I saw the new Callaway driver. It's called Elite. That was probably the best new driver that I saw of the lot at the show, and we saw a lot of them. Some of the technology, which I'll share with you, that was really cool. There's a lot about technology at this show, whether we're talking about simulators, because last year was the first year, you can probably tell I'm out in the golf course right now walking. Last year was the first year that so-called rounds played off course exceeded rounds played on course.
Wow.
Which shows you that the proliferation of simulators and golf entertainment venues, et cetera, continues, and it actually has exceeded the on-course. It's good for the on-course because it becomes a venue, it becomes a pathway of ascension to take your game onto the green grass course too. So that was really cool. But the thing I was going to tell you about technology-wise that I was really impressed with, there was a company called FlightScope, and they had a little rangefinder. You know, everyone's got rangefinders, right? This one takes into account, sure, pure distance, you know, the way that they do. But then it not only took into account slope, which if it's uphill, it adds to the length of the shot, as you know, and if it's downhill, it takes away. But it also took in calculations such as weather conditions, wind direction, humidity, whether it was raining, whether it was sun. All these different variables are all brought in before. And then it gives you a number based upon the net of all of that and based upon your average distances hit. You know, it's ongoing learning. It will give you a recommendation that you need to hit an 8 iron or a 9 iron or a 7 iron or whatever appropriate club is on top of everything else. So it's like a caddy in your hand.
Wow.
That probably is even more accurate, to be fair. So it was amazing. It was just, I saw a lot of that kind of stuff.
So FlightScope, when the device is taking all this information, is it taking all the information in? Is it sensing what the weather, what the wind is blowing at?
No, it uses Bluetooths through your phone. So your phone is going to an app that's going to pinpoint weather. So it's a higher authority on the data that it's getting than what it would pick up just by some type of sensing mechanism.
Yeah.
So it's much more accurate than that. So
wow.
That when it nets down to what it's giving you, it's giving you a number that I believe you can trust. Now, I haven't tried it yet. It's not out in the marketplace. It will be in a few weeks. But I was just amazed by that. It's just the advancement of technology is mind-blowing.
Yeah. For golfers, that's terrific. How's the, price point?
they vary. I saw a rangefinder, I think it was Bushnell was the company, and they had like this mini rangefinder, which still has the Jolt technology, so you know when you hit your target, et cetera, et cetera. Theirs was $299. The one that I was looking at, the one I was just telling you about, if memory serves me, it's $499.
Mm.
So they're in that category. I don't think that represents a particular price increase from where rangefinders are right now. It's just that the technology is getting better.
That's awesome. Yeah, to know that they're holding back on, charging you for a Porsche,
mm-hmm. I'm sure they're out there. I'm sure if you want to spend, I'm sure you can find venues to do it, means to do it. I mean, there's some drivers that are very, very high-tech drivers out of Japan that I've seen that were $5,000 for one driver.
Whoa.
So it's there if you want to hunt it down.
Wow. Now, and when you say the drivers, and the putters were beautiful, you're talking about aesthetics. How have they changed?
Yes.
How have they gotten better just out of their construction?
Well, I'll tell you, I'll use the Callaway as an example because I brought it up already to answer your question. What they're doing with that particular driver, the first step of what they did was to reduce drag.
Uh-huh.
And in a driver, there's two places that you get drag, just like you would with a car, for example. There's two places that you get drag on your downswing. One is right behind the axis of the shaft adhering to the head. So right there you get drag. The other is in the aft of the club. That's at the bottom of the crown of the club as it meets the mid portion of the back of the driver. That's where you get a tremendous amount of drag. So Callaway worked on the shaping of this driver, and remember, that's where they put the carbon so that they take the metal weight out of it so they can place it elsewhere, and I'll get into that in a second. But so by the way that they shaped it, they reduced drag. Now, that what would it amount to? You might hear that and go, well, what does that really mean? Well, it's a couple miles an hour faster. But the funny thing is a couple miles an hour faster should give you a yard or two more distance. And it doesn't stop there. They use what they call an AI face. So back in the day when I was on the equipment side of the business in earnest, if we were going to make a head, say someone's going to test a head, and they wanted to have, you know, weight so that the toe hangs so they couldn't go left like VJ likes with his drivers or what have you, you had to tool and cast, how many would it be? 10, maybe 20 heads, and it's very expensive and very time-consuming and very slow to try to find the head that works for the best of the best and the rest. Now, because of the CAD systems and more, they can literally create tens of thousands of samples. Tens of thousands. And I'm not talking about physical samples. It starts in their CAD system so they can do dynamic testing. That's what they did with the face. So the face has gone through this massive use of technology so that they've determined, okay, we know precisely where the best place is, and we know precisely where the vast majority of amateurs miss. And for the vast majority of amateurs, they miss it north of the so-called sweet spot on the face and out towards the toe. The other second most frequent miss is low and left towards the shaft, you know. So by beefing up those particular areas, what they've been able to do is affect longer drives that are better, so-called straighter, when you otherwise would have a wayward distance off hitting it in those respective areas in the club face. That combined with what I was talking about before, when you remove weight from areas like on the crown or on the sole of the club and you push it to the perimeter, again, you're going to get corrective spin and corrective direction based upon that weight. You're also going to get what they call high MOI. MOI stands for moment of inertia, and it relates to stability of the club face at impact, particularly at impact in those regions that I just described to you that are off the center of the club face. And they have a higher level of stability, MOI, than they've ever had in drivers. So the combination of all these things can add up to real distance. It adds up to real performance, where a drive that normally you'd find in the rough or in the woods is going to be more so in play, even if you didn't get a tremendous amount of additional distance from it. It's in a better position than it would have been with a club that didn't have this technology. So I don't mean to bore you with all that, but I get excited about it and kind of geeky because it's really cool.
Well, it's nice to know the club's going to help me. I need all I can get.
Yeah, it's real.
Yeah, and it's real. That's fantastic. That's exactly what we need. It's amazing how technology has worked in the golf industry. Just looking at the golf industry, how it has shaped the push for better performance so that more people can play the game and not feel left out. Because this club is now giving me some assistance. And as long as I understand, you know, some of the basics in the swing, which people like Ben Hongo, the president of the Aloha Section PGA, a fabulous instructor who'll be on in a little while, he, you know, they can help with staying in your swing, you know, teaching you all those sorts of things. So you don't walk in with a handicap, literally, and you're able to get on the golf course and have some fun. Maybe you won't hit it always perfectly, but no one does unless you're playing on the PGA Tour.
No doubt. Even those guys don't hit it perfectly.
There you go.
They're going to benefit from this new technology,
yes,
too. So, it was really, I saw a lot of that, spent the whole week reporting on all that stuff, and it was as it always is, it was great fun.
Yeah. You know, I just wanted to digress. Where are you playing? What course are you on?
I'm at a course in Central Florida. It's at Reunion. This particular, because it's the day after the end of the show, so I'm with a group called North and West Coast Links, and it's an Irish group. North and West Coast Links does tours through the northwest of Ireland and into Northern Ireland. And so North and West Coast Links has this group out, and I told them I'd play with them, and that's what we're doing today. northandwestcoastlinks.com.
And so are they okay that you're having this 15-minute chat with me?
They're looking at me a little odd, but it's okay. But they do that anyway.
They look at you a little odd anyway. So you've written, oh my goodness, 14 books. Your 12th, I remember the 12th, you know, the golf round, I'll never forget. 50 of golf's biggest stars recall their finest moments. That's inspiration right there. So are you working on a book now?
You know, I think anyone that's a book author is always working on another one.
Uh-huh.
Always.
Yes.
I've got some ideas of going, because when I started in doing writing book author, if you remember, it was in a series called Chicken Soup for the Soul. It didn't have anything to do with golf.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was in this area of self-help. And I'm thinking about kind of going back into that again with the next one, and maybe doing it with a specific area of mental discipline, physical discipline, like the Marines or something like that.
Yeah.
And because I think people, I just saw a thing on it yesterday. Not again, you talk about digressing. I saw a guy talking about neurons in your brain. And your thoughts connect through neurons, and the strength of that thought and its impact upon your life start to manifest because of the way that your brain is wiring. So if you're negative thinking, your neurons are connecting and forming bridges to this. This becomes your reality. It's not just passing. And I think through the mental discipline that I've seen through many different areas, but one that I just mentioned to you, I think could benefit a lot of people, me included. So that's kind of where my mind is at right now. So sorry to go down that road too, Daniel, but you're asked.
No, I don't want to. I'd never apologize. It's all fascinating. I mean, here is Matt Adams, you know, the host of Fairways of Life on Golf Channel. And, you know, I could go on and on and on about all the things he's done, but Chicken Soup for the Soul, you know, that was a fantastic best-selling book. Lots of folks use it to inspire themselves to better things. Now, next week, are we going to see Tiger Woods on the golf course? I've heard rumors.
I've heard the same rumors, too. It's that's not an easy walk because of where we're going. You know, I've got my fingers crossed, but something in me is saying no. I hope I'm wrong. I hope you send me a text and say you said no and he ended up playing.
Yeah.
But I just have a sneaky feeling that it's not going to be there.
Which golf course are they going to play? It escapes me. Torrey? No.
Is
it? It is Torrey. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Torrey Pines is not an easy walk. Gee, it would be fun to see him back on the course. Of course, then we'd all want him to play terrific.
Yeah.
All right. Yes. So our number one golfer in the world is going to be back on the golf course, I think, next week.
Yeah, he's coming back next week as well. Scottie Scheffler is going to be, Jordan Spieth, sorry, is going to be back playing at the AT&T Pro-Am, so Pebble Beach Pro-Am. So there's going to be some big names coming around. And, you know, we need it. We've seen what's going on with the ratings. We've seen what's going on with the overall interest. It's very interesting. This kind of goes back to the conversation we had to start about the game of golf. The game of golf is absolutely booming, but in some areas, the perception is that the game is struggling because of what's happening at its highest competitive levels. It's a dichotomy. They may be trying to figure out their pathway forward, but the game is doing great. Rounds are way up. Everything is all the metrics of the game itself are very, very strong. It's just the game at its top competitive level, and you've got people that look at leaderboards, even though the core, those of us who are in the golf core, right? You'll watch any tournament and you'll watch anybody play and you want to see the up and comer and you want to see people play well. And you love to see the attention from someone you've never heard of before to someone that becomes a prominent player.
Yeah.
But for the casual fan, they turn that on. And the number one casual fan draw was the name that you invoked, which was Tiger.
Yeah.
And if they don't see names that they recognize on that leaderboard, and Scottie Scheffler got a lot of news in the last couple of years, obviously.
Yes.
So that would be one that would help.
Jordan yes.
Spieth is a big fan favorite. There's others. If they don't see those names, they kind of tune out because there's a lot for people to consume right now. I remember speaking with a friend of mine, a longtime professional in the industry, and he said he wonders if it's not only that people are kind of approaching golf on TV with a meh kind of reaction, but it's also because they're actually engaged in either playing the game or in some other pursuit, whether it's going to, you know, an inside facility, a simulator in the winter or what have you, which I thought was an interesting theory.
It is. You know, we are. We're all so busy. Got to record it and then play it back when we have time. Who's got time? I don't know. Do you got time? It's a rugged one. I have so many questions. You have to come back on so we can talk about live and, you know, live and let live or not let live. Would you be so kind next month sometime to drop in?
Yeah. I'm actually hosting the Genesis coverage for PJ Tour Live and ESPN Plus, so maybe we could somehow figure out something around that, depending on what my assignments are, my air times.
Yes.
And I'd love to come on and give you some perspective there, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope Tiger's playing.
Yes, and thank you so much, thank the people you're playing with for giving me so much of their time with while you're playing golf. Have a wonderful round, and I'll let you go.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Matt Adams, host Fairways of Life on Golf Channel, syndicated via TV affiliates around the country, available around the world, free on the Fairways of Life YouTube channel. You can hear this show podcast. RadioGolfClub.com is where you go. And you can always hear us live streaming there as well, so you can take us on the road with you. Anthony Pioppi, author, golf writer, executive director, Seth Rayner Society, is in the clubhouse next. My name is Danielle Tucker. This is the Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to the Golf Club.
PGA Junior League is a fun team golf experience for kids that the entire family can enjoy.
Boys and girls learn the game from PGA and LPGA professionals and have a great time with friends.
Find your team and get ready for a fun and exciting PGA Junior League season.
I want to see you out playing in your jersey and having fun. Visit PGAJuniorLeague.com.
Hey there, Hawaii. It's that time of year. It always is. The new year and the riding mower sale at Aloha Power Equipment. Whether you're a homeowner or a super-sized landscaping business, we've got the riding mowers of your dreams waiting for you. Don't forget the accessories, from mowing to mulching and bagging. It makes your yard work so easy. You just mow it, blow it, bag it, and you're done. Remember, it's still fire season. Protect your property with the best tools around. Live on the neighbor islands? Not a problem. We ship off island just for you. And shipments are arriving daily. Aloha Power's open. Oh, well, they're open Monday through Saturday. The only day they're not open is Sunday, the day I go to Waipahu. Tell them Danielle sent you.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore has reopened to rave reviews. Come play our newly renovated greens. Bring the family. Invite some friends. When you stand on that tee box, see that view, you'll know why Poipu Bay makes any day special. Come, join the aloha at Poipu Bay, where golf is played. Call 808-742-8711. Your tee time is waiting.
Here's the local rule sign. Keep it in the fairway. It speeds up play. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Anthony Pioppi, author, golf writer, executive director of the Seth Rayner Society. He has been a historian and golf writer and an archaeologist. Something very close to my heart, archaeology. He's the author of four books and co-author of another. He's contributed to such publications as Golf Course Architecture Magazine, McKellar Magazine, Mass Golf. I think that's Massachusetts. We'll find out. The Magazine of the Massachusetts Golf Association. Pioppi is also the executive director of the Seth Rayner Society. Welcome into the clubhouse, Anthony.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Now, tell us, what is the Seth Rayner Society?
Okay, so Seth Rayner was a golf course architect who worked starting in 1910 and died unexpectedly in 1926. And we are fans of his work. And so it's people, and most of Rainer's work, although there's two Rainer golf courses in Hawaii, most of his work is on the Eastern Seaboard. And so we get together, we hope, two times or three times a year and travel to and play his golf courses.
And so when you're playing his golf courses, I imagine there's some interesting conversations about what it looks like now, what it looked like then.
Yeah, and so, you know, from my standpoint, coming as a historian, and my real focus is on Rainer, and Rainer's protege was a guy named Charles Banks, and both of them were mentored by Charles Blair McDonald, who's the first great golf course architect in the United States. I see more of that stuff, and I try to educate our members as we go. Like, you know, if we go to this course, look, this course was built in 1921. Here's what else he was building at the time. Here's some stuff that's changed. A lot of times we'll have speakers at the dinner, and we'll have either the historian or the superintendent from the club or maybe the architect that did the renovation restoration, so that our people not only are playing it but also getting, you know, an education about Rainer and the golf course.
So, and you're writing a book about Seth Rainer?
Yeah, that's kind of been doing that for the last 10 years, trying to find a publisher and all that. But, yeah, I've been researching him for over 20 years now. And there's two other guys that I research with named Brett Lawrence and Nigel Islam, and we've combined all our research into one massive archive.
Wow.
That nobody else really has. So we have you know, country club or golf courses coming to us, and architects who are doing restorations coming to us to get information about their course that nobody else has. It would take them, you know, dozens if not hundreds of hours to find.
Are you a nonprofit? Are you able to give them this information?
So the Seth Rainer Society is separate. The Seth Rainer Society is a nonprofit.
Okay.
And we do our thing, and that's just about the event. But Brett, Nigel, and I work on our own, and, you know, we, like any other good research, we charge for what we for what we found, because we've put so much time into it. I mean, it's really three guys who've been researching the same topics for over 20 years. And there are some other people out there, I think, who, you know maybe know as much as we do, but nobody has the archive that we do.
Right. Yes, and the background and the information, and you can you can expand on everything. You know, any questions they have, you can answer. Tell me about your archaeology.
So, yeah, that's a term that I coined. One of the things that I did through research, and not just with Rainer and Banks, but other stuff, is to go find golf courses that no longer exist.
Oh.
Or go find golf holes on an existing golf course that no longer exist. You know, in that sense, to kind of really uncover these architectural histories. There's a golf course about 5 miles from where I live in Connecticut that was very prominent for a while, and it's sitting out in the woods. And I went, you know, you take a 1934 aerial and you get another nutcase friend to come with you, and you go walking in the woods and you can find the golf course. And it just kind of helps get a feel for what was there and kind of the history of the course and the history of golf in the town where I live.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's also doing things like, say, going to a Seth Rainer golf course and being like, hey, they moved the green and this is where the green used to be, you know, and go find that green, or, you know, come to a golf course and, you know, I walked with people and said, look, you know, that depression over there isn't just a depression, that's a bunker. You know, we have the aerials or the drawings or whatever to say that's that, you know. And so it's archaeology in that sense. It's really uncovering this history that's, you know, buried or obscured or something like that.
Have you found any, you know, golf balls, featheries, anything like
No. No. Well, you know, I'll tell you, it's funny. I've said that to some courses that were dredging their ponds. I'm like, pay attention to what. I found golf balls, I think, go back to the 1940s.
Wow.
But I've said to them, when you're dredging your ponds, you've been here since 1918. Like, you might want to, you really want to take and see what's going on in that muck coming up.
Yeah.
Because those golf balls are protected. They're not exposed to oxygen or water after a while. You know?
Yes.
They're just buried in the mud.
Mud balls.
Yeah.
This is Anthony Pioppi, author and golf writer and executive director of Seth Rainer Society. He's written Shore Acres, The First 100 Years, 2016, 1916.
That's a Seth Rainer golf course. That's the history of it. That's a Seth Rainer golf course north of Chicago.
It's from 1916 to 2016. Co-author of Haunted Golf. Haunted Golf. What's that? Is it really haunted?
It is. It's it's really good ghost stories that revolve around golf courses. We found, my co-author Chris Gonzalez and I found some stories where there was ghosts on or near or, you know, in the clubhouses of golf courses, and wrote a book about it.
I want to get that book. That sounds
like a good one. I like it.
Yeah. And then the history of the Minicata Club golf course.
Yep, that's Minneapolis. That was a very prominent golf course. It hosted a U.S. Open, a USAM. Chick Evans won a U.S. Open there as an amateur. Bobby Jones won there. There's a Curtis Cup, Walker Cup.
Ryder Cup,
U.S. Senior Women's. And the problem with the golf course is it's landlocked. They literally cannot back up a tee any further than it is. So there's no way that they could ever host majors again. But at one time, it ranked among the most prominent tournament venues in the country.
Why, a bunch of rich people wanted to live around the golf course?
No, it's roads. The problem is there's one highway that goes past or an expanded road and all of that stuff, and there's just no place for them to go.
Wow.
And there's also a lake. They're on Lake Calhoun.
And then there's the lake. Yeah, you can't get rid of that.
Highway and a lake will do it to you.
Yeah. Okay, and another book is To the Nines, and I'm getting to The Finest Nines. What's the To the Nines?
To the Nines was the first book in the history of worldwide golf literature that was solely about nine-hole golf courses, or is solely about nine-hole golf courses. And I profiled 20 cool nine-hole golf courses
far out
in the country. I grew up in central Massachusetts, and there's a lot of nine-hole golf courses around there. The first two golf courses I was ever on in my life were nine-hole golf courses, and I didn't realize until I got out into the world that that's not true, that most places don't have nine-hole golf courses. Most places in the country have a lot of nine-hole golf courses, and so I just decided to write a book about them.
Yeah, you know, and we have one. And your book, The Finest Nines, North America's Best Nine-Hole Golf Courses, and you've included Kahuku Golf Course.
Yes, I have.
Did you go there?
I was doing some research, and I wish I knew the actual beginnings of it, but somehow I ended up talking to Zach Blair, who's a PGA Tour player and played college golf for Utah. And every year they would play an event, and he somehow found out about that golf course and told me that it was the best golf course that he played the whole time, every time they were in Hawaii. And I did some more research on it and talked to some different people, and they loved it too and got some photos to see what it looked like, and it looks like an amazing place. And it ended up in the book, and everybody who's ever contacted me after going there that it's just an amazing place, and it's if anything underrated, you know, just because of the experience.
Sure,
where you are and the wind, and,
yes,
you know, the whole kind of how you drive to get there, and
yes,
all that. So yeah, it's a cool spot. It's a really cool spot.
Yes. Now, who designed Kahuku Golf Course?
If I remember correctly, they don't know because
exactly.
it was part of a build for a company, possibly.
Yes.
And so it was just one of those things where, you know, and this was common in situations like this. You know, there's a nine-hole golf course next to the Panama Canal that was built for the workers. And I think that's what this golf course was originally. It was just built for the workers. And so they laid out a golf course on a beautiful piece of land because in whatever year, 1920-something, there was not going to be – nobody's thinking about housing and real estate, right? So they just took this beautiful piece of property and put a golf course on it.
Yeah, they were growing pineapple and sugar cane, and why not? Hey, there's
right, and so your worker's got to do something, right?
Yes, yeah. Or the guys that, you know, own the pineapple and the sugar cane, they want to go out and play.
right.
Yeah. Okay. So you're also now writing a book about Seth Rayner, and we also, you know, we have a couple of golf courses. So yeah. Mid-Pacific Country Club is one that was a Seth Rayner design. And I say was because it's different now. Tell us.
So it's a really interesting story. So Rayner is at the height of his career at this point when he goes out to Hawaii. He stops at Lookout Mountain, Georgia to see that golf course. He stops in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin to see Blue Mound. He stops at Cincinnati to see Camargo. He stops in California to see the two courses at Del Monte. He ended up designing the course at Cypress Point.
Wow.
But he died before it was built. He designed the two courses at Monterey Peninsula. He gets on a boat in Oakland, And he goes out to Hawaii, specifically brought out to design what is now Wailai Country Club, but was being what was built for a hotel, the Royal Hawaiian Hotel. And while he's there, a group of guys who had formed Mid-Pacific but didn't have had land, but didn't have an architect or anything like that, heard about Rayner being out on the islands, and hired him to design their golf course. So Rayner's there just late November into December. He spent a couple weeks, definitely on the ground of Wailai, most likely on the ground of Mid-Pacific. Goes back to California, stops and sees some courses, goes home for Christmas, goes down to Florida to look at a project there, and develops pneumonia and dies.
Wow.
So Mid-Pacific, as far as Brett Nigel and I know, is the last Rayner design.
Wow.
Now, courses open, and it's, so Wailai opens, Rayner sends a guy out to oversee, well, Rayner's dead, so Charles Banks sends this man named Joe Mayo, who was a construction superintendent on some other Rayner projects, to oversee the build of Wailai, and most likely the first nine holes at Mid-Pacific. And then Mid-Pacific's second nine doesn't get built until after the war. It doesn't get built until the late 1940s, I believe. And it was the construction was overseen by a Hawaiian architect by the name of, hold on, I have his name right here. His name was Willard Wilkinson, and he was a big architect. He was probably the only resident architect in Hawaii at the time. So he oversaw the second nine of Mid-Pacific. From the aerials that I've seen, it doesn't look like a Rayner golf course. And then, so we don't know if he built the second nine to Rayner's plans or to his own.
Okay.
And then Mid-Pac as well as Wailai had massive changes over the years, so the golf course isn't what Rayner left behind or what Rayner designed.
Well, yeah, certainly when they put a hotel in the middle of what was probably, a fabulous drive along the ocean. You know, I mean,
right.
Like a drive with your golf ball.
yeah. They lost. It was like the first, second part of the third, the seventh, eighth holes. Those are all gone. You know, and then so there's some changes on the interior. That's Wailai. And then there's massive changes from Mid-Pacific as far as they lost some holes and moved some stuff around and all that. But Rayner was there and Rayner was on site. He never built a golf course where he hadn't been and seen the land. He might have not been there for construction. He might have had his guys do it, but he saw everything.
Wow.
So he saw the mid-pack site. He was definitely, for Wailai, they weren't sure if they had the land. So we have correspondence or a newspaper article saying that Rayner routed three golf courses for the hotel, and then they built the one that they wanted, I think, because they got the land that they wanted. So there was actually three routings. And the cool thing about the Wailai design is the drawing appeared in the newspaper. So there's a Rayner drawing of a golf course that appeared in a Hawaiian newspaper.
Wow.
And there's not a whole lot of those out there.
Yeah.
There's not, you know, of the 80 or so golf courses that he designed, I don't know if we actually have drawings. I don't know if we have drawings for 30 of them. So it's quite rare.
Well, how did you become a member of St. Andrew's Golf Club in Scotland?
In 2000, I was writing for a magazine no longer exists called Golf Week Superintendent News, and I went over and I volunteered on the crew for the 2000 Open Championship at the Old Course. I had worked on golf courses, so I had experience. I did that, and then I went back a couple of times as a writer, and then once on my own, and I was sitting in the club one time with a bunch of guys, and they said, it was founded as the laborers kind of club. You know, it was guys who were carpenters and joiners and plumbers and that kind of stuff, and you know, golf course greenkeepers, and you know, the R&A is English, and this clubhouse is right next to the 18th green, and so they asked me to join, and I joined.
Far out.
Yeah. It's good. I like it.
Well, before you go, I just am amazed at how much travel Seth Rayner did in a time when traveling was not easy. He must have had...
And you look at some of those guys, like we know that Donald Ross had a really nice car and a driver, Rainer was by train, and if you know, and the other thing that's interesting is he traveled with his wife. When he got really popular and about, he was building for Charles Blair McDonald while he was designing his own golf course. So he built St. Louis, he built Mid-Ocean in Bermuda, he built the Greenbrier in West Virginia. His wife traveled with him, and it was by train. And I started doing research. You know, you get on a train in New York City, and you're going out to Oakland to get a ship to go to Hawaii. You're not going direct. You're going to Chicago, to possibly to Omaha, then maybe to San Francisco. You know, then to San Francisco, and then trying to somehow get, you know, then take a taxi or whatever.
Yep.
So it wasn't just like you know, it wasn't like a direct shot. Like, oh, I'll get on a train in Grand Central Station and end up in Oakland or San Francisco. There was a lot to it.
Yeah, truly.
And you know, we get the feeling that his wife's name was Minta, Araminta, but she was known as Minta, that she did a lot of work for him, that we think that she's the one who wrote his letters and signed them.
Oh.
So she's drafting letters while he's going. She might have been the one sending the telegrams while he's sitting on the train drawing plans, you know, looking at topography maps and drawing plans.
Excellent. Anthony Pioppi, author and golf writer and executive director of the Seth Rainer Society, thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse. A pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. It's good. And if anybody's looking for the Seth Rainer Society to join, it's the SethRainerSociety.us.
Seth Rainer Society US. Easy. Thank you.
Yeah.
You'll be back,
thanks,
won't you?
Yeah, 100%. Anytime you invite me.
Awesome. Aloha.
Okay. Aloha.
We're coming back with Mr. Travel Guru Extraordinaire himself, who doesn't have to take endless train rides to get to his destinations. Right after this, my name is Danielle Tucker. This is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
When Sears opened here more than 60 years ago, who made all their signs? The Honolulu Sign Company, to 1724 Hart Street off Waikamula Road on the Everside. They do building marquees, letter signs and lighted signs, parking and tow signs of every kind, OSHA compliant signs, custom signs of all types. Call 847-4047. Licensed and insured Honolulu Sign, serving Hawaii since 1939, where quality and service have not been forgotten. Call 847-4047 now.
Poipu Bay on Kauai's South Shore. Share our home with need a gift for that special someone? Tired of giving fruit baskets you know are getting recycled? Give a Poipu Bay golf gift certificate. Whether it's a birthday, business, or anniversary, here's the one gift that is always the right size and the perfect date. Just give us a call and it will be waiting for you to pick up or mail to your office. There may even be time to sneak in a nine. Call us for the perfect gift, where great golf is played every day at Poipu Bay on the Garden Isle.
I've never had an eagle.
Heck, I've never had a birdie.
I would not recognize Jesper Parnevik.
I've never played a round of golf.
But I support the first tee.
It's teaching my daughter important values.
It gets them off the couch.
He's more patient, focused,
self-confident.
He's just a happier kid.
At the first tee, we teach kids important values they can take with them from the golf course to their communities and to the rest of their lives.
I didn't know a little golf ball could make such a big difference.
Visit thefirsttee.org to learn more.
Got my new book, 3 Tips to Play Better Golf. Practice, practice, practice. Now, back to Danielle Tucker.
Michael Patrick Shields, Hollywood insider, radio talk show host, author, travel writer, host of Michigan's Big Show with Michael Patrick Shields, award-winning, syndicated, my travel guru extraordinaire, because when he comes on the show and talks about where he's been, where he's going, he always has inside. His base is Beverly Hills, so you know he's got inside information. And you can go to Travel Tattler at the A position to see his photos and what he says about all kinds of destinations, Ireland, Las Vegas, the Motor City, or any of the 35 countries and countless visitor destinations around the world Michael Patrick Shields has been to. Michael Patrick, welcome into the clubhouse.
Aloha and hello this morning from Palm Springs, where I'm going to play the Trilogy Golf Club at La Quinta
Wow.
And I'm excited to try that out and excited to share it with you eventually on the radio and in print.
That would be terrific. Oh, yeah. I mean, what's the golf course like? Do you have any idea what you're getting into?
No. If I knew, I would either be so excited, I would be too nervous to hit the first tee shot. And here in Palm Springs, you might recall this was the home of the Bob Hope Desert Classic on
yeah.
the PGA Tour. And they used, I think, four or five different courses for the Bob Hope because celebrities came to play and presidents came to play. And Bob Hope always said there were so many golf courses here, he never knows which one he's going to play until he sees where his first tee shot lands. And which was a crack about his game, but is actually true. There is plenty of golf here. And the reason I think it's exciting when you think about it, especially at this time of year, as we get into the end of January, you're vast listening audience in Hawaii can't maybe relate to this, but I sure can. Growing up in the sport of golf, and at Christmas, you would almost always get some kind of gift that had to do with golf, whether it was a new putter or some clubs or, you know, a glove or what have you, balls. And you'd be looking at it where I lived in Michigan in, you know, 10-degree temperatures and 8 feet of snow. And you just look at these and say, oh, it seems so long till I get to go and play with these things, you know? And so you would turn on the television, and there was only coverage on Saturday and Sunday for a few hours of the PGA Tour. And for those beautiful moments through January and February, you followed the tour and watching sunshine and flowers and mountains and even desert was so enriching to the soul. And you could follow the tour. Every, you know, the first 2 weeks were in Hawaii, the Tournament of Champions, and then, of course, the Sony Open. And then over to California and Arizona, where you would have the Tucson Open and the Phoenix Open and Los Angeles Open and San Diego, Torrey Pines, and then, of course, Pebble Beach. And they would go all up and down the West Coast there at those places. And once they were done with that, of course, the first one in Florida was the Doral Ryder Open. And I was thinking about, you know, the fact that a lot of these courses, including many on Hawaii where they had the Skins game and some of the Champions Tour events, are places that we can actually go and play. And so as you became a little bit older, not only could you have watched them on television, but you could go and play
yes.
and walk in the same footsteps as people like, you know, all the way back to Lee Trevino, Jack Nicklaus, Gerald Ford, for that matter, Bill Clinton, whatever. And go to these places, for the most part. Riviera would be the exception there, where you just heard they're going to move the L.A. Open down to San Diego. But Torrey Pines, where they're playing this weekend, in America's finest city there, San Diego, La Jolla, you can go and play there. I mean, it takes a little bit of money. Well, it takes a lot of money. But you can go and play these places and watch those paragliders when the winds aren't too high, flying over the Pacific, and pretend that you are Tiger Woods winning the U.S. Open over Rocco Mediate or any of the other greats that won there in San Diego.
That's what, you know, that was romantic. The way you described watching, there was such nostalgia. And it was, gosh, thank you.
Well, you know, when I would practice putting, like, this is just dumb, but, you know, you've got to keep your mind occupied. I remember Sayre Park one time at the Jamie Farr Classic in Toledo. I said, how do you practice for 8 hours? Because they do. I mean, you see them at the height of their powers when they make the cut and they're in contention. But what about all the hours that these players spend grinding, practicing? And she said she would break up her practice session into one-hour session. So she would putt for an hour, chip for an hour, short irons for an hour, driver for an hour. Still, it's daunting. But
yes.
My thing on the practice green was always, okay, if I make this putt, I qualify for the Sony Open. And then I'd go to the next hole, and if I make this putt, I can get into the Bob Hope tournament. And I would walk myself through Hawaii and California and through the tour schedule because the places were all so beautiful on television, particularly Hawaii.
Did when you got these presents in the middle of winter in, you know, snow everywhere and you just had to try, did mom catch you trying to putt in the living room?
Oh, yeah. No, that was no question about it. You know, we had I remember as a kid, and you probably do too, they had this little putting cup where you could put into it, and if you plugged it into the wall, it would shoot the ball back at you. So you could keep putting through slot number one, number two, or number three. And it is romantic. Golf is a very romantic sport to write about and think about, and obviously to photograph too.
Yeah, yeah, wow. Oh, okay. Now, we're going to celebrate Jim Nance today. Right? He's going to get a star on the Walk of Fame in Hollywood?
He is. Jim Nance, CBS Sports, a tradition unlike any other, the Masters, the NFL, used to be the NCAA tournament, is getting a star on the Walk of Fame, and it was supposed to happen on Valentine's Day. That has been postponed indefinitely now because the LA Open will not be at Riviera. It will be down in San Diego.
Yeah.
And some of these things around Los Angeles are being postponed anyway because of the situation. Now, the Grammys are going to go on next weekend, and the Oscars, too. But what I don't know is to what extent so far is the actual partying that goes around these events going to take place, because optically, given what's gone on and what is still kind of going on, too, it's maybe not cool to have a big bash. But so there isn't any star ceremony for Jim on Valentine's Day, as had been planned.
Yeah, and the LA Open switch, and of course the fires in California. So he has no idea when he's going to get his Walk of Fame.
No, and it's been a while since it's been announced. The I went to the press conference. Every year they have a press conference, and they announce who this year's class of star inductees will be. Uh-huh. So this was on the roof outside Capitol Records, if you remember that building that was like a stack of records. And they gave the announcement and in the sunshine on the roof, and there were about 5-6 media there, including myself, and Access Hollywood and people like that.
Uh-huh.
And they said Jim Nance will be going in.
Oh.
So I gave him a text, and I said, hey, congratulations on your star on the Walk of Fame. And he writes back, what are you talking about? And I said, I'm at the press conference. They just announced your name. You're going to be getting a star. And he writes back, Jim Nance, to me, is this one of your funny jokes?
Because it's not funny.
No, it's not a joke. So I took a picture of the press release, and I took a picture of the stage where they were making the announcement. And then I thought, was I not supposed to say anything? I mean, they just gave a press release to the world.
Yes.
But, you know, I felt bad, but he's like, there's nobody I would rather hear about it from than you.
Oh.
Thank you for telling me this. And
and
it was really super sweet.
How long have you known Jim Nance?
I knew him. Well, I met him through Ben Wright, of course, all those years ago. And I'm pretty sure the first place I ever met Jim Nance was at the Masters tournament there.
Wow.
At night in a restaurant. What was that place called? Frank Turkanian was part owner of a restaurant who was the director.
Oh, dear.
And
yes.
I went over there to meet Ken Venturi and Frank Turkanian and, of course, Ben Wright, and he introduced me to Jim Nance. And Jim always honors those that came before him. If you notice, whether it's football or golf or basketball, he loves the broadcasters that he learned from. And so, therefore, if Ben loved me, and he did, then Jim treated me as kindly as he has all these years, and our friendship grew out of that.
Wow. That's so wonderful. I mean, I'm just, you know, relationships and friendships, it's wonderful to see them flower. And the fact that he's like, is that one of your terrible jokes? Which he didn't put it quite like that, but
no,
yes.
Yeah. And we had that other connection through President Bush, because I wrote the book with Ken Rayner, who was President Bush's friend, George Herbert Walker Bush. And so I would see Jim Nance at the George Bush golf tournament, which I emceed one year. And I thought, how ironic is this? I am emceeing the gala for the George Bush golf tournament, and Jim Nance is sitting in the front row. So we had a lot of fun, and I'll tell you an insider story with him. When he comes to Los Angeles, we'll go to breakfast at Nate and Al's, which is in Beverly Hills. It's a deli, and he can walk there from the hotel they put him in. And he used to had breakfast there with Larry King, the great broadcaster, on some occasions. And so we sit at that table, and we talk about broadcasting. And I say, Jim, this must be exhausting for you, because on the PGA Tour, NFL, and used to cover the NCAA, every city you go to, I know you've got friends, and they all want to see you, and this is a work trip for you. You know, you've got meetings and production calls, and, you know, constant busyness. I said, how do you manage that? And he said, along the way, there are a couple of sanctuary cities. What do you mean, sanctuary cities? He said, cities where I don't really know anybody who would want to see me. Because he's a giver, and if you want something, he'll give it to you. And, so I'm very, very careful. You know, I understand how busy people like that are and how many demands there are and that kind of thing. But I will say that Kansas City is one of his sanctuary cities. Where he will be this weekend, of course, for the NFL game against the Buffalo Bills and the Chiefs.
Oh, wow. So, you know, I mean, that's, gosh, that's a sanctuary city? That's, yeah. It doesn't sound sanctuary.
Sanctuary!
Not with all that excitement going on and everything happening and everybody wanting to be there. Yeah, when do you have to buy a ticket to go? 2 years ago.
Well, he used to come to Hawaii every year, but now Jim's been going to Mexico in the Cabo, and he bought a condo with Jared Goff, the Lions quarterback, in fact.
Nice.
So, yeah, I mean, he doesn't get much time, as you see on his schedule. I mean, he'll be at Pebble Beach, where he also has a house next weekend.
But, fantastic.
He's a busy guy, and I'm glad you're celebrating him, and we'll figure out when that star ceremony is going
to
be.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to you about that a little bit more. You've written so many books about people, with people. So, you know, when you say you co-authored with Larry King, Ben Wright, George W. Bush, Donald Trump, how does that work?
It depends the level of engagement with the person you're writing for. In Donald Trump's case, this was long before he had any political aspirations. It was a golf book. He put his picture on the cover, and somebody or he wrote about a paragraph of an introduction. And it was Donald Trump, the best golf advice I ever received. So they sent me stationery with his letterhead on it, and I contacted a lot of his friends and people he worked with and colleagues who play golf, and I said, hey, what's the best golf advice you've ever received? So basically, in that case, it's almost like taking dictation. But they did introduce me to him down there at it wasn't at Mar-a-Lago, but it was at the golf course there, the Trump International, nearby. And I've had him on my radio show a couple of times. But again, not in a political way. He called in. Actually, he was calling one time when he was supporting Mitt Romney for president. That tells you how long ago it was, because I don't think they'd be in the same room now. But I was covering golf, so he got on the air with me to talk politics, and I said, are you by Doral? And he said, I'm going to know later today. I'm in what's called a stalking horse position, which is a very good thing to be, because either I'm going to buy it, and I'm going to get it at a really good price, or someone else is going to buy it, and I'm going to get a fee for being in that position. So the art of the deal was going on right there, and the best I can figure it is that people said, ooh, if Donald wants it, I should buy it.
Oh,
so he'll get a little, you know, like a spiff there for having been involved. We know the rest of the story is that he bought it and renovated it and has put a lot of money into it, and it's still one of the mainstays of the golf world in Florida, although no longer on the PGA Tour.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Ben Wright, we're gonna go to Ben last. George W. Bush, did you sit with him?
Is George, I've met George W., number 43, but the book is with his father, number 41, George Herbert Walker Bush, who loved golf and was very supportive of the PGA Tour's first tee. And grew up in golf and all that. And so there's a book that I wrote called I Call Him Mr. President.
That's
Stories of Golf, Fishing, and Life with my friend George Herbert Walker Bush.
Yes.
And I wrote it in collaboration with his friend Ken Rayner, who's been on your show, because everybody, who's anybody, comes to Danielle Tucker's golf show. And it's, again, not political in any way. It's just, what is it like to be the friend of a president and former president? And what's it like when he goes to play golf and goes fishing and travels? And it's very, very lighthearted. And it was very intriguing to be around, former president. And again, you know, when we had the book launch party, I emceed that with Ken Rayner in a little theater in Kennebunkport.
Uh-huh.
And George and Barbara Bush came to the book launch and sat in the, I think, probably the fourth row, because they weren't the type that would be escorted to the front row. And it struck me as shocking that I am speaking at a lectern and the former president is watching me speak.
Yeah.
I mean, I would have done anything to get into a room to watch him speak. And that is a surreal, totally surreal moment, for sure.
Yeah. And then Larry King.
Larry King's book was about fatherhood. And every Father's Day, I think about that book. It was similar to the Donald Trump one, where he's on the cover. And My Dad and Me, it was called. Uh-huh. It's a very sweet book, where you went around and said, what did you learn from your father? What uh-huh. lessons did you learn from your father? You know, the biggest lesson I learned from my father is probably golf, because I remember on Saturdays, it would be so cool. He would come back with his friends, you know, around noon, and they would go in the basement and take off their golf shoes and play poker or whatever. And they go, wow, I wonder if he'll ever take me on golf on Saturday morning. And when he did, I would pull the cart and see these cool guys that were like masters of the universe, you know, just laughing and playing for dimes or whatever they did. And so had he not taught me golf, I wouldn't have had a career in golf. I wouldn't have had a life in golf, and I wouldn't be talking to you.
Wow.
So I appreciate what he did in that regard. And I remember my brother and I wanted to play par three one time, and he was upset with something we did. So he said, nope, you're not playing golf today. That's your punishment.
Oh.
So you know what we did, Danielle?
What?
We ran away from home. We protested. Oh, yeah? So we disappeared on our bikes. Now, where we thought we were going to go and how long this running away from home was going to last, I don't know, but probably 2 hours later, he found us at the park on the swing. As we realized our, you know, our time had kind of run out on our protest.
Yeah, you know, do all kids run away from home at some point? Just down the block? My sister and I, think, ran away from home, you know? It's like... And what else are you going to do? You know, you're going to go back. You just don't realize it. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. It's funny. Trying to be independent. Ben Wright, your book with Ben.
Ben Wright, if you want to know what it's like to be, I don't know if it's like this anymore, but then it was an awful lot of fun to be a PGA Tour network television broadcaster with Pat Summerall and Ken Venturi and Jim Nance and Bobby Clampett and all the rest. And so his book talks about, you know, the intrigue of golf and all the PGA Tour players he was around, and also what they did at night to have fun at those glamorous events and locations I just told you about. So it's pretty rich, and including Augusta National. It's called Good Bounces and Bad Lies, the autobiography of Ben Wright. And it just occurred to me, Danielle, another turnabout was that my father introduced me to golf. And when I was working on Pro Tour Hawaii, I had the opportunity for he and my mother to come to Hawaii for their first and only time and see Hawaii. And once again, he gave me golf. And as an adult, I was able to bring him to the Big Island of Hawaii.
Wow.
On a trip he and my mother will never forget.
Wow.
And isn't it funny how life just goes, you go from watching the PGA Tour on television to playing this weekend like I will at La Quinta, to having your father introduce you to golf, to bringing him to Big Island Country Club and the other places that we were able to play on the Big Island. And it's just funny how life plays out.
Yes, and you're going to be on The Price is Right. Michael Patrick Shields, Price is Right.
March 19th, set your calendars for The Price is Right. Look for the guy in the orange blazer.
You know,
I don't win a penny, but I will get a lot of screen time.
Did you win anything?
Not a cent, no. I'm a two-time loser now because I lost on Let's Make a Deal a few weeks ago, too. With Wayne Brady. He played rock, paper, scissors with me for $500. And I put out rock, and he put out paper. And he was disappointed, and I didn't win the 500. So right on camera, right on, let's make a deal. I blew a chance for $500.
Oh, so, and the price is right? Yeah, also, gee, it wasn't right. The price wasn't right.
No.
Bummer.
But listen, if you come to L.A., anybody, you can go on these shows. They're dying to have you. It doesn't cost you anything. You could win, but you will have a good time, and you'll see what it's like to see these historic television shows made.
You mean, well, how do you become a player in, you know, in from the audience? It always seems rigged to me.
Rigged. Well, it's rigged to the extent that they're looking, the people who are invited to come on down are the ones that they see to be the liveliest, or they have the interesting outfit, or maybe a certain demographic, I think, sometimes plays into it.
Okay.
But you have a small interview while you're waiting to go into the stage with the producers, and they'll ask you, where are you from? What's your name? What do you, tell us a story. And if they sense that you're a live wire, you'll be one of the people called to come on down. So that is not random. That is because they want to make a lively, interesting show. Or they might pick somebody if you came all the way from, Boston to the, So, yeah, you want to know if you're going to go, make sure that you dress in a colorful fashion or make one of those I Love Drew Carey T-shirts. And just know they're watching you from the minute you get there to see the ones that they want to come on down.
And be ready to schmooze.
Yeah. And if you do Let's Make a Deal, they'll do a video audition, I guess you would call it, with you by Zoom before you get invited to go, and you'll have to wear a costume.
Okay.
But if you go to Let's Make a Deal, there's a good chance you'll play for something because it's a much smaller audience.
Okay. You get into everything. You know that? Well, you're just amazing.
That's why I'm the Travel Tattler. I tell tales at TravelTattler.org or GoWorldTravel.com or my latest book, Travel Tattler.
Travel Tattler. And he is Michael Patrick Shields, my travel guru extraordinaire. He's based in Beverly Hills. It doesn't get much better than that. Michael Patrick, it's always fun talking with you. Thank you so much.
I'll mention your name at La Quinta later today in Palm Springs.
Thank you. Aloha.
Mahalo.
We're going to come back and learn some golf. Ben Hongo, PGA, President, Aloha Section, PGA, Director of Instruction, Hongo Golf. After this, my name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
Stay tuned. We'll be hitting the greens with Danielle Tucker when we return to The Golf Club.
I'm Colin Morikawa, 2020 PGA Champion. In every golf journey, some goals can feel like an uphill climb, even intimidating, especially if you're on your own. But in the game of golf, helping hands are all around us. Whether you dream of a championship or you're just trying to make golf your thing, PGA coaches have industry-leading knowledge, guidance, and support to help you take the next step. Just like my PGA coach, Rick Sessinghouse, has always done for me. Wherever your golf journey is headed, a PGA coach can get you there. Find your PGA coach at pga.com/coach.
It is Aloha Power Equipment. New Year's, no, it's the Year Begins Sale. It's Aloha Power Equipment's Year Beginning Sale. That's right, because it's January. We need to get everything together. And by the way, we're going to have quite a bit of rain coming up, not just in the end of, at the beginning of next week and through the end, it'll be a little bit less, and then it's going to increase. So you want to get these things right away so you can get to it, get things ready for rain. It looks like we might even have a rainy season. Wouldn't that be something? It's all the riding mowers that are on sale. Mower accessories galore. You mow it, you blow it, you bag it, you're done. Let all that equipment do the work for you. Faster, smarter, and it's not back-breaking. Yes, that's the big charge in all of that. So be sure to go to Aloha Power Equipment because you're going to see all the fabulous things that are on sale. And if you're in the Waipahu area, you're on Farrington Highway, you want to be going eastbound to make the turn into Aloha Power Equipment. That's where they are. You can see everything that they've got and you can take something home. Oh, if you're on the neighbor islands, don't worry about it. you can get it shipped right to you. They ship to you. So that's what Aloha Power Equipment is all about. You need to go in there. And, of course, in the middle of Honolulu, there's an Aloha Power Equipment on Alakava Street right by Costco. Yes. Head on down. Tell them Danielle sent you.
If you want more consistency and more distance in your golf swing, schedule a session with Coach Claude Brousseau, PGA Master and Director of Player Development at the Wailea Golf Academy. He's ranked number one teacher in Hawaii by Golf Digest since 2019 and three-time PGA Teacher of the Year. Claude will simplify your game and make you better. Scratch golfer or just beginning, call Claude at 808-856-9458 or by email, claudeforbestgolf@gmail.com. That's 808-856-9458. And have more fun playing golf.
K-O-R-L, Y-N-I, Honolulu. And now we are going to bring in Ben Hongo, PGA, president of the Aloha Section PGA, just back from the PGA show. Ben Hongo, welcome into the clubhouse.
Good morning.
Good morning. I mean, are you jet lagged or what?
I had a day to recover, but it's certainly nice to be in the, you know, 80 degree Florida. I don't know if you knew, but it was like snowing over there. It wasn't snowing in Orlando, but it was so cold.
It was so cold. Yeah, we're not used to it. It was, I don't know, 67 degrees and we were all freezing and putting on jackets. And yeah, that was just the morning, you know.
Yes.
When I was talking with you, you know, this, I thought, Ben Hongo, and I've got to ask him because a lot of people here, you're coming out of your swing. It's like,
yes.
Hello, what? I'm coming out of my swing. What are you talking about? You know, so could you please explain what coming out of your swing means and what you can do about it?
So, you know, the way I interpret coming out of the swing is you're coming out of your posture, so... When you really think about it, your body, it can, in the golf swing, if we kind of exclude the arms, if you just look at the core body, there, you know, if you're standing in front of a mirror, you can bend forward, okay, or you can bend back, okay, so that's one range of motion, and then you can bend to your right side, or you can bend to your left side, so there's two more range of motion, and then you can turn to your right, and you can turn to your left. So a lot of people who stand up or their hips kind of thrust forward through impact, it causes you to, it makes it very difficult to pinpoint the low point of the golf swing, which makes it hard for you to hit a golf ball. So a lot of people top the golf ball or shank the golf ball.
Yes.
And it can also do funny things to the club face, so your ball flight's going all over the place. Anyway, it really, you know, it's probably the main cause of inconsistency of golfers. So one of the, you know, I'm a TPI certified coach, and one of the things that we talked about, like their main reasons why people come out of it, or they call it early extending, is, Is it the people? Do they just not have the capability of doing it, or do they not have the knowledge of doing it? So, you know, I think one of the tests, and TPI has a 14-point test thing, and I'll do it. I won't do all 14 in the lesson unless I see something really, really obvious. But one of the ones I'll do is I'll just have people do a overhead squat, and you can learn a lot about how flexible or how mobile the person is. So, like, for example, for me, it's really hard for me to do a deep squat because my calves are so tight.
Yeah, okay.
And my ankles are really locked up. So dorsiflexion, like toes to the shin, I don't have a lot of flexibility there. And I think because I've sprained my ankles so many times as a kid playing sports and whatnot, and I think there's some scar tissues in my ankles that prevents me from doing it. So that, you know, that prevents some people from staying down. Okay. And another thing also is, you know, when you start really thinking about those six motions I just mentioned. So a lot of people think that the forward bend in the posture, let's just say we bend 30 degrees forward towards the ball, that we stay in that position. But when we turn through the golf ball to the left or towards the target, if you're actually forward bending, you would be forward bending towards the target. So I call it the old man follow through, where you follow through and you're kind of falling over, you know. And what really actually happens is the forward bend actually gets replaced by right side bend, where the right shoulder is a little bit lower. So there is a little bit of know-how as well. But, you know, having said all this thing, I think a lot of people swing too hard sometimes. They don't let the club do the work for them. So I think balance and tempo are, you know, foundation of a good golf swing. I mean, I don't think you see anybody on tour, you know, without great balance and great tempo. So that's kind of what, you know. So my suggestions to a lot of people, you know, if they're having some posture issues, number one, just check your posture. Make sure that, you know, get in front of a mirror or use your phone. Take a picture of yourself and see how you look and see if you can kind of fix that. In fact, I was just watching the Golf Channel just a few minutes ago, and they had a little segment on Harris English, and that's what he's been working on this offseason is, you know, trying to make his posture just a little bit better.
Wow.
And so they were explaining some, you know, so even the best in the world is working on these fundamentals.
Just the fundamentals, yeah, and because they're fundamental to our success. That's why.
Yeah.
Correct. At some point, there's nothing really tricky about golf. You've got this. You've got to do it right to hit the ball and then putt or whatever. You know, it's simple, but it's not simple.
It's very complicated.
It's very complicated. So, but yeah. I was thinking, it's only natural for the human being to see a white ball there sitting on this little stick, and you can get into your posture and feel very. But when you come into your downswing, all of a sudden you're going to stand up and really grip and slam into that little tiny white ball. Well, at that point, you completely ruined everything because you're not in what you were before to hit the ball. But our nature, our reaction is to hit the ball, we've got to come up and really push at it, you know, or really smack it. And I think if we were to have a video of what we're doing, does that help people see it?
Yeah, a lot of people, you know, when I use, you know, videos, I would say 99% of my lessons, just because it kind of cuts through all the insecurity of, you know, because, you know, a lot of my lessons I do and I never really met the person, and there has to be a 5% of doubt. Like, hey, does this guy really know what he's talking about? So I'll use a video, just show it to him. And,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And a lot of times what I'll do is the first couple of swings, I'll just kind of play on the loop and just play a full swing, I mean, full speed. I say, hey, here's your swing. And a lot of people are like shocked. They're like, oh my goodness, that's the way I swing the golf club, you know, and this is where reel and feel comes in play, because they could be very, very separated. So I think the video and showing them, I think it's a powerful tool for sure.
Yeah, and they have to really trust you, don't they?
Because the thing is, you know, I've never had a student come to me and request to hit the ball shorter. That's never happened.
I don't want to go so far.
Yeah, I'm hitting the ball too far. So it's never happened.
Yeah,
you know, so
funny, huh?
So I guess our inner want is always to hit the golf ball further. I mean, you know, if you look at the PGA Tour, the players that have the crowd, you know, people who want to watch the players is usually the guys that hit, you know, that bomb the ball.
Yeah.
They want to watch, you know, they want to watch Bryson, and they want to watch, you know, all these guys that hit the ball far.
How did you take in the PGA show? Did you do a lot of learning in the breakout rooms, or did you actually get in there to see all the technology that's going into the clubs and all the different clothing and shoes and what have you?
Yeah, so for, you know, for the people that's never been there, it's at Orlando Convention Center, and it's the biggest building I've ever been in. I went in there past weekend. I flew in on Saturday, and there was a teaching summit. They do it every other year. So I spent 2 days teaching summit. It was in a convention center. I think there was 700 of us that attended it, and that was Sunday, Monday. Tuesday was a demo day on the biggest driving range I've ever seen. It was somewhere, I mean, and it's a circular driving range, and there's, I don't know how many vendors there are, but there, you know, there has to be over 100 vendors showing off their, you know, clubs and technologies and, you know, whatnot. And then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday was the show. I only went on Wednesday because I flew back on Thursday. But, you know, I had read, I think there's like over 30,000 people that show up and visit the conference. And then there are like over 1,000 you know, vendors showing off their stuff. So, you know, like you said, everything from golf technologies to, I mean, anything that's to do with golf. I mean, if you go play golf and you go, okay, there's a golf cart, there's a golf bench, there's ball washers, there's POS system, food and beverage, you know, name it, the mowers, you know, teaching equipment. I mean, everything. Everything that you need in the golf business is there. It's amazing.
It is. And you must have seen something that, or did you see something that really made you say, oh, I've got to find out more about this thing?
A lot of the AI stuff is really interesting.
Okay.
I don't think it's going to completely replace us as teachers, because somehow people still have to understand, you know, the information and how to process it and stuff like that. But I think sometimes, you know, how we as a teacher, we process things, it might get tighter because AI is telling, you know, it's going to see these pictures and they're going to say, well, these are the XYZs that you have, you know, you have to try to work on and whatnot. So it's going to be, it's going to be interesting where golf is going to be in 5-10 years from now.
Oh, dear.
Also, you know, simulators, I mean, indoor simulators.
Yeah.
That was a huge thing. I mean, you know.
Yeah. And I've heard, you know, this morning Matt Adams was on the show and he gave us some numbers about how golf is in great shape, but there are more people playing golf indoors or in simulators than actually on golf courses. You know?
Yeah, I can't remember what where the lines that we were talking about, but they were saying either the top line, the top line revenue or the profit. I can't remember which one was which, but they said that 58% of one of those two areas is from indoor golf now.
Exactly.
It blew my mind.
Yeah.
It blew my mind.
That's exactly right. Indoor golf is making more money than outdoor golf.
Yeah.
I thought indoor golf was for, you know, practicing to get ready to go to play outdoor golf.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows? You know, you've got to come back on in a week or two, whenever works for you, because I want to talk to you about upper body strength exercises that you might recommend. You know, for those folks who find themselves starting to get hunched over, you know, that's not good for your game. You're losing your posture. You know, I think it's such a bummer. Guys seem to have really strong upper bodies and women don't. Maybe that's just, you know, my lower body is really strong. Upper body is not strong like guys. But this is Ben Hongo, PGA President, Aloha Section, Director of Instruction, Hongo Golf. He's a teaching professional based at Kapalua Golf Academy, Golf Digest Best Teachers in Hawaii 2024-2025. He's a runner. He's a foodie. He's a sushi cuisine lover. And he loves the game. You heard it. Ben Hongo has been a member of the Aloha Section PGA since 1989 when he first accepted an assistant golf professional position at Kapalua. Thank you so much for being inside the clubhouse with us today. And soon I'll learn how to speak and enunciate.
Thanks for having me. Have a great weekend.
You too, Ben Hongo. Aloha. All right. I want to thank the people who make this show possible. Well, it's you. You listening right now, you make this show possible. And the people who might listen to the podcast later on, you make the show possible. And if you've got it on live streaming somewhere, if in the radio, you know, thank you so much. And thank you to the Aloha Power Equipment guys and gals. It's the Aloha Power Equipment New Year's sale. This is a new year. It's 2025. And all the riding mowers are on sale and all the mower accessories galore for you to check out and find out. I didn't know that exists, you can say. Let your equipment do the work. It's faster, it's smarter, and it doesn't hurt the next day. Get yours today at Aloha Power Equipment, open Monday through Saturday. They're only closed on Sunday. They're at Iwile next to the Costco gas station. And in Waipahu, the Aloha Section PGA, teach your children to play golf. They'll learn manners. It's the gift that lasts forever. Self, health, and friendship. Go golf. And the Honolulu Sign Company, branding banks and shopping centers and businesses and hotels. You gotta have a sign since 1939. They can't find you, you see, without a sign. My name is Danielle Tucker, and this is The Golf Club.
You've been listening to the award-winning Golf Club radio show with Danielle Tucker on the Golf Club Network statewide. Tune in next week, and we'll tee it up together only on The Golf Club.
Copyright 2025.